Hello, good people, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast, a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and I am very excited to be welcoming to you today a lovely human being and a very gifted and well-experienced person in the realm of astral projection and out-of-body experience. He's been at this for over 20 years, has gone through many personal transformations along with it, and I'm very, very pleased to be welcoming him to the broadcast to share his wisdom, experience, and wherever the muse takes us. Welcome, David.
Hello, Jamil. How are you doing?
Pretty good. And yourself?
I'm excellent, recovering from last week of being sick, but I'm feeling 100% better, so things just work magically, you know. If it was a week ago he got with me, oh boy, I was just a wreck. But I'm feeling great now, ready to get back on projecting and my endeavors and working towards a marathon, my second marathon, which is going to be in 2 months in Detroit. So, yep, kind of really reflected this last week, and even though that I was sick, I still managed to squeak out a few projections, but yeah, they were kind of difficult, but really interesting.
Well, you know, I think that's a good enough place to start, because I often find that when I get really sick, that's like the creator saying, Jamil, it's time to stop and do some internal processing, and I do find myself inclined to do more inner reflection, inner work, inner journeying. And so share with us, if you like, how is that for you when you're, quote, sick? Like, in your practice and my study of my review of your work, you have been very focused in a very balanced way. You have been very left. We'll use these terms that we know, left and right brain. Like, some of us will come into it more right brain, intuitive, we'll just be kind of out there. Some of us will come into it more left brain, you know, a very linear process that has its place and its process that we recognize the steps as we go along. And it seems to me, I would say that in your exploration, you have been applying both. You've had your left and right brain both engaged, but has been a left dominant process for you. You made a conscious decision. You are going to learn this. You are going to develop this, and then brought the rest of you in. Is that correct?
Yeah. Kind of like recapping off this last week and what you were saying about, you know, when you're feeling sick and, you know, out of it and you really don't want to do anything. And a lot of it, personally for me, you know, sometimes I have a difficult time, you know, sleeping. And, you know, I'm always plagued with thoughts in my mind. So, like, as I'm drifting, trying to sleep, I'm kind of that borderline between the you know, falling asleep and the awake, which you translate. And as you go deeper in, and, like, the last sleep was not my intention to project. It just happen. I tend, with about a 75-80% accuracy, pretty much say, yeah, I want to project this week, and this is when I want to do it, and I'm pretty much successful in doing that. Now, there's times where, you know, it will be at random, and it will happen, and like this last week, it did happen because, you know, times that I was getting up, I mean, I was sleeping a lot, and, you know, being on, you know, over-the-counter medicine, Benadryl, which is knocking me out, but still, with my active mind and waking up at different times, and my wife gone in California, and then I have also 3 dogs, which their whole pattern was broken up this whole week, so they're barking, letting me wake them up around 5 o'clock to lift them out, and that's not my schedule because I'm a night person, and oh boy, with all that ingredients mixed in, it's easy to do slip into that trance state because of the fact that it breaks up your schedule, and it's not the norm. So, like, I talked about this in different forums and also with the Astro Academy about, like, a method, like an alarm clock method, where you set the alarm clock to go off at different times, you know, maybe 20, 30 times in the night. And this is kind of the same thing that had happened to me this week. My whole schedule's all over the place, waking up at different times, and so therefore I had awakened in a false awakening, which, you know, is an OBE, and I carried on with the task that I wanted to do at hand, and then when I came back, I'm waking up again, and I'm like realizing, wow, I just projected, but this is not what I wanted to do. I wanted to let the dogs out. So a lot of it has to deal with, you know, interrupted sleep. And one of the methods, and it's not something that I created, it's just something I kind of stumbled across, you know, my own research and my own reading and, you know, playing around with the different states, trance, the different methods, what works, what doesn't work, personally for me. And a lot of times, if you set an alarm clock to go off at different random times, you don't know the time, it can be really daunting task if you really want to project, but it will trigger in your mind. You're going to be thinking, hey, this alarm clock is going to go off, who knows where, when, how, and then you're going to want to turn it off, and as you fall into sleep, you're awake, you fall asleep, you're interrupted sleep, eventually you're going to wake up one time, but you're going to wake up out of body and not realize that you're thinking, hey, I just need to turn off the alarm clock, and then you finally do wake up, and it tricks your mind, your whole equilibrium, your body, your form of, you know, sleep cycle, everything to project. As for the last week, again, going back to not feeling really well, I was hit really hard with the flu where, you know, the runny nose, congestion, drainage, my head felt like a big pumpkin, and people would be talking to me, and it'd be like I would be in the cartoon Peanuts, Charlie Brown, and the teacher would be talking to me, woof, 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 and that's all I interpreted this whole week. And it's like going around like that, like I said, it was just extremely exhausting, and I was kind of surprised that I did project, but I also looked back at it and I thought, oh, wait a minute here, it makes sense because my whole schedule was out of sync and it was all over the place, and I have three dogs that, you know, they rely on certain times because they're, you know, creature of habit, and so they're waking me up at times that 6 o'clock in the morning, and that's about maybe a couple hours of my sleep after I just get to bed. I get to bed, and they're saying, hey, we got to go out to use the restroom and, you know, food and play a little bit. And I'm like, hey, get us up. And so if I didn't do that, then I'd be paying a bigger price. And being sick on top of that, yeah, it's like, okay, I'll take care of you guys. Head at it. Have fun out there. But it made sense when I started really looking at it, you know, why did I project and this? I'm like, oh, well, this is a standard. You know, this happens all the time to me, but when I looked at the whole interrupted sleep and, you know, being out of sequence, it made sense. And that's a lot of times, a lot of people will come to me, ask me about that particular method. It's a tough method because it really can mess up your sleep cycle, but I would really advise something like that to be done on a weekend where you don't have no engagements later or have to be awake for things, because when you're messing with your sleep, you want to get like at least 6-7 hours comfortable sleep. But when you break it up like that, that can really be really challenging, you know, later on during the day.
Well, that's interesting. Can you explain when you are waking up and you're breaking up your sleep intentionally? How do you recognize the difference between just being in that groggy, oh my God, there's the alarm, to actually being out of body? How do you know that the difference?
Well, what I've done over the years, and personally for me, I kind of break it down to three different awareness levels. The first one is the mind wake body sleep, as I can control it to where I catch myself falling into the trance state between awake and being asleep. And I've been extremely lucky with this. And when I first started, I didn't know what I was doing. And as I started documenting and trying to figure out, you know, what's going on behind the scenes and why am I, you know, randomly projecting and what is this mind wake body sleep, I kind of fell into it naturally. And that's basically watching yourself fall asleep. You kind of let yourself go for a little bit, and you just kind of let yourself just zone out, get plagued with thoughts, and as the body starts to fall asleep, you're in that that level, and then you wake up, but your body's asleep, but your mind's awake. And then normally what I do is to go deeper within that state to anchor me in, is I will perform some kind of technique, like a roll technique. Like, I imagine myself like on water, laying down, and I'm rolling like a log in circles. And what that's doing is deepening my trance level and making sure that I go deeper and deeper into that state versus waking up prematurely. But as I go deeper into that state and calm, I'm spinning at 100 miles an hour, and the vibrations start to hit me, and I'm vibrating, and I'm out of body. I exit and fly outward, and or sometimes I just roll off the bed or spin out and fly out, whatever the case may be, how I exit. That's the one thing, the mind, wake, body, sleep state. The second one is the actual false awakening, and that was what I experienced this last week. False awakening is nothing more what it is. You're waking up. You're going on about a specific task, like a physical task, a routine that you normally do in the morning. Like, you get up, go to the bathroom, brush your teeth, comb your hair, put your clothes on, grab your breakfast, go outside the door, get to the car, and you get to work. And then as you open the door to get to work, then you're waking back up. And you're like, man, that was so vividly clear. It is just, you know, you look at it and you just think of it as a dream, but in actuality, it's an out-of-body experience. And how I've been able to tell between the dream and the false awakening is that everything is static. It doesn't change dynamics. You don't get that wishy-washy fluidness. Everything is static within the experience. And as you start to project more in the mind, awake, body, sleep state, then you start to recognize the differences between a dream and the false awakening. Because I've had many experiences where I would project mind, awake, body, sleep, and I would return back to the body, be pulled back, and then I think I'm actually getting up, and I'm going over to my tape recorder or my notepad, I'm starting to jot everything down, and then I'm looking around, you know, at the room and my environment, I'm like, wait a second here, I'm still out of body. So I prematurely went into a false awakening, realizing that I'm not out of body, but I am, and then I get pulled back. So it's the false awakening, it's a trick state. And that's a real tough state to recognize if you're up physically, you know, in waking life, or if you're actually on the other side, because there's been so many times that I've been tricked about the false awakening. I didn't realize it, and I go on, and I'm like thinking, as I come back, I'm like, it's like, so, you know, the opportunity of a lifetime right there. It's like, yeah, I project, and I can go, and I don't realize it. And a lot of my validation, okay, validation, you know, statistically, have come from the false awakening state, because I'm not trying to prove anything. I'm not trying to test anything. It happens. And when I say validation, and this is just not by, you know, verbal, like, oh, this experience or that experience. I can go back to all my notes the last 25 years, and I can say, yeah, on this day, this happened. On this day, this happened, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so as I start jotting out all this information, all these validations, then you start to look at it and say, hey, this is a bigger picture behind, you know, there is a wizard behind the curtain. And, it exists. It's not, you know, hearsay. It's documented. So an example of a false awakening validation is a lot of times I'll go into the false awakening. I'll wake up. I'll be in bed. And my wife will be coming into the room. She opens the door, closes the door, walks up to me. She's looking down at me. I'm in bed, and we're snuggling and everything, and before you know it, bam, I'm back in my body, you know, with a little tingly vibrations after, with the residue of it, and then my wife comes in, same scenario, I don't see anything, she gets in bed, she looks down at me, we start to snuggle, and I'm like, oh, okay, I mean, could you be any more, can this be any more of a solid validation right there? And I've had precognitive experiences where I've worked with my dog, and I've had actually video cameras on my body, and actually you can access this online too through my website. But I've done documentation with video cameras, and I've done documentation with my dog, and in one of my experiences, I'm going to really gloss over so much, but I projected, it was a false awakening, my dogs were with me, and I was chasing my dog upstairs, and there was a puppy at the time, and her name was Spirit. And Spirit, I went running after Spirit because I didn't want her to sleep out of the room because I know she was going to go to the bathroom, you know, on the carpet. So I went running after her in the out-of-body experience, false awakening. And mind you, on the physical side, I'm capturing all this on video, too. And my dog, my other dog, Leroy Brown, he was on the bed. And during that experience of that 30 seconds to about a good minute of that old false awakening experience, his head popped up and then he looked around and went back to bed when that experience happened. So anyway, long story short, in the OBE, I went floating upstairs, and then, of course, I see the stain that, you know, the urine stain that my dog Spirit went to the bathroom on. So I'm like, oh, man, I got to clean this up. So I let the dogs out outside. They go outside, and I'm looking at the table. I close the door to the outside, and I go downstairs, open up the front door, and it's rainy, cloudy, overcast, and then, bam, I get pulled back to the body. I didn't think anything of it at the time, okay? Didn't think anything of it. I just realized, wow, I projected. The dogs are upstairs making noises, and Leroy, you know, he had his little episode where he nodded something and went back to bed. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So I documented everything, no big deal. The next day, I tried the same thing. I tried projecting. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. But the dogs upstairs, they were making noises in the crate, and Leroy's on my bed, and he's restless. So I said, okay, just say I'm just going to cancel this projection. I've been trying for about 2, 3, 4 hours. Forget it. So I go running upstairs. I was going to let the dogs out. What happens is Spirit gets out. She bolts downstairs, and I go running after her, and I catch up to her maybe 5 seconds later, and she went to the bathroom on the floor, downstairs, on the carpet, and I'm, like, thinking, oh, my God. It's like, this happened in the experience a day ago, and Spirit went to the bathroom downstairs, but upstairs in the OB, she went to the bathroom. And then, of course, I go outside and open the door. It's raining, it's cloudy, overcast. The day before, it was sunny. So I'm like thinking, wow. So the false awakening state is an out-of-body experience, and like I said, it does produce those validations, and that's probably the most powerful state ever, because it's tricky, but you'll see a lot of validations come from that if you take the time to document. The other one is the dream through the OBE, and that's breaking out of that little dream bubble and becoming conscious in the astral plane, astral projection, astral level, spirit level, wherever you want to call it, and that's becoming conscious and looking around, and the environment holds static. Think about it this way. A lot of people say, yeah, dreams are just OBEs, or lucid dreams, and all that stuff. I beg to differ. It's because of the fact that when you start having validations that come from a dream to an OBE, and we document it, and additionally, when things don't shift on you, like I can become conscious from a dream into the OBE, out of body experience, and look around, and if I'm looking at a clock or an LCD display or an image, whatever, it holds its form. It doesn't get distorted or it's not wishy-washy. You break out of that little bubble. A lot of times what I've seen in my experience, in one experience, think about it this way. Let's say you're in class. And you're listening to the instructor, and the instructor is monotone, and you're, like, not really there. And you're thinking about, like, later on going out with your friends or going to see a movie. And so you're in the room there, but your mind is elsewhere. So literally, it's kind of like the same thing when you're in a dream. Mm-hmm. You are there spiritually, but your mind is all fogged up elsewhere, you know, in a daydream. Like, it's basically becoming conscious from that daydream place and focusing where you are in that area and that room, and then that's how you project into the act. So that's how I break it down. And again, everybody has their different interpretations. I'm not saying this is a gospel degree, but that's how it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the word astral is that broad, right? The astral in literature, and I like the older literature that was, I find that the older literature is a little less saturated in fear, and the mm-hmm. idea that any kind of astral connection is somehow not okay. We've kind of had this last century and a half of this intensity, this intense bombardment of fear in our astral reality. And so the astral word, the energy of the astral, tell me if this is what you think about this, the astral itself just simply being the ethereal planes or that surround us, that perhaps the next, what in a lot of literature, but this really works for me too, the planes that are just outside of our physical body. Not that we can't access it with our physical body, because that's determined by our own sensitivity and our own ability to cultivate and develop these abilities, mm-hmm. our multi-sensory reality. That is a gift that we all have. We all have that choice to cultivate our astral awareness. But using that word astral in the biggest sense, in the most universal term, how would you define that?
You know, when I think of astral projection, or you know, a lot of people have their different interpretations of spirit travel, spiritualism, astral travel, new age, and all that. I'm like, wait a minute, we're talking stuff that's been around for billions and billions of years. Well, this is not something that's new age.
Right.
You know, this is something that, you know, back in the Old Testament, New Testament, it's in the Quran, it's in, you know, the Native Indian, their beliefs. It's in Buddhism. It's everywhere. So how can it be something that's new age if it was, you know? Mm-hmm. I really don't like using the word astral projection. I think it more just like spirit travel, soul travel, or connecting to different levels of consciousness, different awareness of what's there. I have been to different planes. I have been to different heavens, and extremely beautiful. It just sometimes come back from something like that magnificent, so beautiful, and you come back to the physical world, and it's like, oh, it's like, okay, it's going to be nice. And I have no death wish anytime soon that I want to depart this earth, mind you. One experience I remember particular, and like I said, I'm going to gloss over a lot. And I was, like, in a courtyard, and it was stone marble, something that you would, like, read in the Bible, and there was just a big table, and I looked in the distance, there's a mountain, there's water streaming down, and there's trees, just beautiful. I'm sitting in front of, like, two angels, and I'm also looking, you know, up in the sky, observing everything, and there's just burst of colors and little energies, the light and everything, and I'm just like absolutely like in tears of saying this is the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced. And then after that whole experience, you know, ended, I'm just like, I grabbed my microphone, started recording everything, and then of course I got everything documented, and I'm just like, you know, like on cloud nine from that experience. And then I go over to let the dogs out, and of course my dog, you know, had a problem in the crate, and I'm like, oh, thanks for bringing me down from that cloud nine physical, you know. It's like from going from one extreme to the other, thanks, you know. And I'm like, oh, got to get back to reality now. But, you know, we all have that ability to tune into it, and whatever one wants to call it, if it's connecting to the great spirit, ego, Allah, Buddha, God, Yahweh, whatever you want to call it, and whatever makes sense to you, you know, understand it the way it you can understand it. Because, again, when you think about other things, now I know I'm getting a little bit into religious components, too, is that I'm Christian. I do follow God. I do follow Christ. I do challenge a lot of the Bible. Don't get me wrong. But I also host students from Saudi Arabia, from foreign countries, from Korea, from Vietnam, Japan, and I've been learning a lot about their different cultures and their beliefs. And it's, again, it's what they practice, what they feel comfortable with, and if they say Allah, well, we say God. If the Jews say Yahweh, we say God. If the Indonesians say Great Spirit Eagle, we say God. If the Japanese, the Asians say Buddha, one name they can travel about. It's basically culture, different languages, and how we can communicate, and what we feel comfortable connecting with. So to say astral projections, define it as just that. I really say to people, it's like this is an easier form to understand after projection. It's a spiritual component of it, the spirit plane, however you want to call it. Just understand it the way you feel comfortable with it, and don't, you know, try to debate, well, this has to be after projection, or this has to be a mental plane, or this has to be theosophy, or whatever you feel comfortable with it, presenting it to you that makes sense, follow that.
Well, in the beginning, you shared with us a whole handful of these spiritual experiences, these experiences in spirit travel. I like that. That term really worked. It's very unique to the individual, because every individual has their own unique spirit, so everybody's journey would be different, and they would, you know, in a manner of speaking, take their own car, you know, they would take the vehicle that works best for them, you know,
exactly.
If you meet a religion, then you go the religious route. If you love trees, you might go the tree route. You know what I mean? Like, everybody would have their tools to journey that way. So I think that really works.
Exactly. And it's a respect, you know, different people's vehicles of how they connect. A lot of people say, well, I phase. And that's the projection to me. I'm like, okay, you phase. Great. I don't phase. I project. I have these three different vehicles that I travel by. The majority of all my experiences are always mind, awake, body, sleep, space. And then I get a lot of the dreams, too. You know, the dreams in OBE. But statistically, it's always been the numbers have outweighed the other two. A lot of people will say, well, I use this rope technique. Okay, well, if you use rope technique, hey, whatever it takes, you know, to get there, whatever you feel comfortable with to get there, as long as you're going about it in a positive sense. And, you know, grow spiritually to help others and yourself and the people around you. And you're not, you know, trying to hurt others with it. And it's approaching everything in a positive intent and not trying to think that, well, hey, this is some kind of secret bit of knowledge, and I'm going to go off to the girls' locker room and peek in, or, you know, I'm going to get those test questions ahead of time, or, you know, I'm going to get the million-dollar lottery ticket, or I'm going to use this information and try to project and try to hurt something. Wrong. You go down that path, then yeah, it's going to get you in the end. And, it's just not a way to go about it. But, you know, overall, everybody has different vehicles that make sense to them. And when you think about it globally, religion and all that stuff, here we are fighting all because of the name God and a religion of different practices and beliefs. There's a lot of things that of the Arabic culture and their Islam and everything that, you know, we should incorporate in our society, you know, to be a lot more concerned on a lot of things. And then there's a lot of things on Islam side, you know, their beliefs I don't believe in, but hey, this I can't do nothing about it. I can't change it. All I can say is that, hey, this is what you guys follow. I have to respect what you guys do follow, and that's sick. And kind of just take it as that. It's like the same thing as when people look at us and our beliefs and our structure, hey, that's wrong, and da-da-da-da-da, and the, you know, flaunting of women, she's kitty, and everything else, and it's like, wait a minute, and when you think about another culture, you know, everybody's dialed and abused, and it's like, you know, they don't promote all that, and so, yeah, it's just the respect level of the different cultures, and I think if we could show a little bit more towards that, then I think we'd have a lot less, you know, tug and pull in wars because of all, you know, the different beliefs. If we could just kind of step outside our petty differences, you know.
So in your experience and your teaching and working, is it right to say that it doesn't matter what religious background, what part of the world the people come from, that when they take this journey to become conscious and building their ability to travel in the astral or their spirit travel in the realms of the ether, the realms of the universe that connect us all, that they all succeed, that there is a universal commonality that all of these places, that all these people from all these different places reach?
Yeah, I mean,
that's the bottom line, is that no matter where they come from, no matter what the starting point is, that we do find a common place in the ether or in the astral planes where we are all human, where we are all connecting on one level to some degree in a positive intention to grow ourselves. Is that the way? Okay. And I have another question.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you were sharing with us in the beginning about a whole plethora of these out-of-body experiences, from the precognitive dreams to the, I would call them, you know, you had the dream of the dog and then it manifests, that kind of a dream, then the intentional journeying to see something, the mind-body awake thing, and then the trance, you know, all these processes. I'm wondering, did you have these experiences before, or were you conscious of these experiences before you chose to develop yourself in this capacity?
Not at the level I am at now, and then when I first became conscious of it. I mean, I did recognize later years, you know, once I started down that path of projecting, that, you know, previous experiences in my life made a little bit more sense, like the false awakenings, like I explained to you. Like one example, I remember one time, I was probably 19, 20 years old, and mind you, I think I started projecting when I was about 21, 22, somewhere in that neighborhood, and that's when I kind of became aware of it. And I have to thank my good friend, Matt, for that. I didn't think that it was going to be 25 years later still doing this, but I get my hat to him for, you know, showing me this. But, one experience, for example, I remember one time I drank a little bit too much beer, and it was strange because I remember this was the summer, and, you know, school was out, I think I was in college for a semester, or maybe it was high school or whatever. And, yeah, I was drinking, you know, my dad's beer, and I drank a little bit too much. And I remember I was down in the basement, I was on the bed, passed out, and I actually projected. But I didn't realize it at the time, because I had no consciousness of, you know, after projection or even that it existed. Now, what had happened is I had to use the bathroom, okay? So I floated up the steps, down to the kitchen, down to the hallway, to the bathroom, and of course, you know, I'm in the bathroom, and as that happened, the desire was so strong that, you know, I had to use the bathroom. So I got immediately pulled back, and so I woke up, and I'm standing, and of course, my brother at the time was coming down the steps, and yeah, I was using the table, you know, down in the basement where we were, and I was just going, doing my thing. And my brother's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, hey, I'm going to the bathroom. Do you mind closing the door? And I'm like, And at the time, I was just, like, gone. And, that triggered it because I had that desire. I had to go to the bathroom, but I was so lazy I couldn't get up because I was incapacitated. But it triggered it to where, you know, I went through the motions and, you know, my brother cleaned it up and everything. He was rather pissed. But the next day he told me what happened, and I'm like, yeah, get out of here. And he's like, no, that happened, and I know it did. So it's not one of those things that you don't remember. But, yeah, he explained it to me. But later years in my life, I realized I understand because of false awakening. Because, you know, mm-hmm. I had to go to the bathroom, and it triggered it. Another example, and this is a real good one, in my youth, and this was actually kind of like a I kind of fainted, and I went out of body. I was probably like second, third grade, and I was lining up by the coat rack, and I was by my friends, and we were, you know, going to walk, you know, in single file to the classroom. And somehow I lost my balance and went vertical and fainted and into the coat. And as I was fainting, I'm seeing myself from a bird's eye view at the same time hitting the ground, being pushed by the coat, and then being brought back into the body extremely fast. And then I'm like so disorientated, and the teacher comes over and starts scolding me and saying, "Would you stop playing around?" And because the teacher's perspective was me just, you know, kind of falling into the cold, being lazy, and but that's not what the case. And then I, you know, caught my breath. I'm thinking, well, what in the world? I kind of just dismissed it, you know, after that, from thinking of others. But yeah, now I came down to the realization of, yeah, I have kind of like the out of body experience trigger like that. And there's been other times where it's like I'd come home, take a little nap, I'd be tired from school, and I'd be, you know, watching TV, and I'd be on the front couch, and I would zonk out for a few seconds, and I'd zonk out for a little bit, and then bam, I'd be out of body going on some, you know, the pulse awakening, and then I get pulled back, and then I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, just missed it as a drink.
That's really I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. You know, as children, I think that we just have much more openness, and we haven't yet been trained out of it. You know, I met somebody recently in his mid-50s who told me that in his grade school, he used to read the books by putting them between his hands. And he knew everything in the book, and he passed all his tests and had very high marks. And then a year or two later, the teacher told him, no, you can't read books like that. And so suddenly he was, you know, shut down and frightened about that and started reading books the way everybody else did. His grades went down. And I asked him, can you do it now? And he said, you know, I'd love to do it now. But it has been like 50 years since he visited it, you know. But there's that as children, we still, you know, until the indoctrination has done those kinds of intimidating things to our unique soul gifts, we really don't have any reason not to do them, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. One little funny thing is, when I was, I think, like, fourth or sixth grade, somewhere in that neighborhood, I had a crush on this gal. Her name was Tina, and she was, like, about three blocks from me, and we were in the same class together, and we'd be passing notes, and so, you know, at the time, which was actually kind of cool, and I did take a note of, I mean, I did become conscious of near-death experiences, but, you know, like, I would see them on TV or just kind of see them passing. I'm like, well, that'd be kind of interesting. But I remember there was a movie that was actually a documentary, and I think it was, like, Life After Death. This was, like, in the late 70s. And it was showing all around town, so I'm, like, thinking, wow, I'd love to go see this movie. So I'm begging my mom and dad to go see this movie, blah, blah, blah. They wouldn't take it. They weren't into it, and they just didn't, you know, think it was right. So this gal, this girl that I had a crush on, she had a crush on me, blah, 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 puppy love. I asked her on a date, and I asked her, and she asked me, well, where would you like to go? I'm like, take you to the movie. So here we are, at the movies. I dragged my dad went along, chaperone. My brother's with me, and my girlfriend's on my side. And we're watching the movie, Near Death Experience, so I could not, you know, tell them, hey, folks, you're taking me to this movie one way or another, even though I'm taking my date to see a near-death experience documentary. But I thought that was kind of comical. But, yeah, I mean, I became conscious of that, but I never really pursued it or, I mean, it was just more kind of like just decided, yes, interesting, but it wasn't really until, like, 87, until my friend Matt, I was staying over at his house that night. And remind you, this is about, like, you know, 10 years later. So at the time, the near-death movie that came out, and I was probably 8, 9 years old, maybe 10. And, you know, now I'm in my 20s. I was at my friend's house, Matt. And what was interesting is Matt had never ever shared with me, because we grew up through junior high and high school. We hung out all the time. He never told me about astral projection, not about any experiences. And I'm over his house and, you know, we're playing guitar a little bit earlier, jamming out tunes, and then he's reading a book, and on the front cover there's this woman laying down. You can see her body, and you can see a phantom image of her coming out of her body, and you can see her breath, and she's naked. I'm like, hey, what are you reading, you know? I'm like, I want to read what, you know, let me see some of these pictures. And he's like, no, that's not what you think. I'm like, yeah, right. I'm thinking it's like a Playboy or, you know, Penthouse, whatever, some kind of erotic literature, you know, with, you know, old ancient pictures, National Geographic. And he's like, no. It's out-of-body experience with astral projection. And I'm like, nah. I'm like, I wanted to see the other part. And he's like, what are you? But it taught me. It just dug straight into me that it's like, I got to know. I have to know. It's like it just called me, and it still calls me today. It's like, I got to know. It just pulls me in, and I got to know if it's real or not. And as I express to people, you know, you can't judge, you know, your first experience and say, hey, this is the real thing. I mean, even though it did happen to me, and yes, it changed my whole life around, you just got to keep testing and validating and writing and specifically documenting everything to see, hey, is this real or not? And over the years, as you start suggesting you're getting more efficient at it, and this is not altering the focus to make it look all right and, yeah, this is real or not, because I've had so many valve attempts. Don't get me wrong. I have had many valve attempts. But I've had over thousands of experiences that you start seeing the mechanics and the same thing over and over and over again, that statistically, you know, it does or it doesn't change. It's the same connection. It's the same environment. Everything is static. And the outcomes, like if I test something, like let's say, for example, for me personally, I always get caught in like a phone line. Don't ask me why when I'm flying. And I'm like thinking, well, if I touch the wire, what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? I'm going to get electrocuted. Of course. I am on the other side. I touch the wire. I get electrocuted. A lot of it's mental, yes. But I feel the energy. I feel the electricity. I get zapped. I'm burning. I smoke. And I return back to the body. Well, I've tested that over and over and over again. Yes, I've always survived. I've always come back. But it's always the same end result is that, yes, I'm going to get electrocuted. And as we keep scientifically researching this and documenting and testing and testing and testing continuously, you will start seeing the differences between a dream and how wishy-washy, you know, that little bubble that's in. And once you become real conscious of the planes, those levels, the astral body, the spiritual components and all that, then you start seeing the bigger picture. You know, just talking about it is one thing, but once you start writing about it and documenting in depth, then you start seeing the differences between the dream and the actual, the real behind the scenes, behind the curtain. There is a wizard, and he goes by the name of God. And, there's a big world of infinity out there to explore.
That's That's interesting. Well, please tell us about you went from this book that obviously was one of those that, well, fell into your lap via the way it would reach you, and then you've been studying, and please share with us how you came into teaching, and introduce to us, please, your websites, and take us on that path, how you became involved in instructing. What was your motivation for sharing that, what you have been learning?
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of just a progression over the years. It's like, you know, you learn to play guitar. You become really good at it. And others want to learn from you. It's like you want to share your guitar playing. I am a guitar player. I'm a classical guitar. I'm trained. And I can pick up electric guitar. I can play jazz, blues, classical, folk, rock, heavy metal, whatever. Or if I want to change hats, I can, you know, play the acoustic 12-string, record, and I do everything with music. So I'm versatile in that. So, you know, sometimes I have students that, you know, that are with us staying, you know, from, you know, different countries. They want to learn guitar. So I'm like, down with you. And basically, you know, I do all this flashy stuff, and I take them down to extremely bare-bone basics, and their attention spans want to be playing like I'm playing, but I'm like, wait a minute here. It takes time. It's like I didn't get the way to where I am right now, and again, it's a progression. So it's the same thing with the out-of-body experiences. When my friend showed me that book, you know, I was thinking one thing, but when he told me about the astral projection, like, oh, gee, it gnawed at me. It's like 24/7. That's all I thought of all the time. I mean, I was obsessed. And I found a way to connect to the other side. And I had to work it. It's like training for a marathon every single day. You don't give up. And not to boast or anything like that, I'm also a marathon runner too. But again, it's one of those things that it took me time to get to where I am because I exercised. I kept practicing, reading, and over the period of time, the spiritual part of it, and as I'm experiencing all this stuff, you know, in the back of me, I start thinking like, well, it actually came about maybe 6 years ago. I was talking with a good friend in Maryland. His name's Mike. And he's an avid projectionist, and he does a lot of soul retrievals where people who pass on that are stuck on the lower levels to bring them up to the higher levels to guide them. And I'm just like, that is just incredible. And so he's been a real excellent influence, a positive influence in my life with this. And we started talking about different, you know, volunteering and different, you know, ways we can actually use, you know, our experiences, and I've always had it in me where I want to be able to share this somehow. And I started thinking, well, you know, maybe through people that are dying, and or maybe through hospice, or, you know, it was kind of like we were throwing a few things around, and I'm like, I like to be able to share this, because just doing it by myself, that's one thing, because I've already proved it to myself. I don't have to prove it to anybody except myself. That's it. I actually started doing a little bit more reading of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross on The Wheel of Life. Very beautiful book. And then I started reading a little bit more of Gannon Brinkley, Saved by the Light. And then when I started kind of putting the two together, Hostas, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Five Stages of Death and Dying, Gannon Brinkley, Bedside Support, it kind of rang out to me. I'm like, wait a minute, here. I should start donating some of my time to helping patients, you know, about, you know, life, death, you know, moving on, and, you know, that's it. Now, the difficult thing is, being a hospital here, I really have to set my thoughts, my beliefs. Because when I go into a room and somebody who is, you know, going through the dying process, I just can't say, hey, you're going to be okay. You know, don't worry, you know, I'll teach the family how to ask for suggestions, so you guys can communicate, and don't worry, it'll be fine. Yeah, I just shot down in seconds out the door. I have to really respect, you know, the religion, the upbringing, the faith, and their beliefs, and I got to zip my lips. But there was a part of me, I started thinking on the spiritual part of it. It's like, damn, you know, stuff with the out-of-body experiences. You know, hopefully one day I'll be able to maybe help somebody of a family that is going through this and to be able to explain some stuff. And there's the opportunity to have opened up to where I've been able to do that. So in that part, it was very rewarding. Just recently, and one of my managers, volunteer managers, he lost his son a couple months ago. And I was talking with him through email, saying, hey, you're wrong, email, out. I think he was speaking to somebody else. And then we started talking. I said, yeah, I wanted to chat with you about a few things, about what I do. And before you know it, she's reaching out to me for better understanding and support about the other side. And something more fascinating about the near-death experience and out-of-body experience because of this month, which we think is done. And she said, you know, I'm not completely 100% sold on it, but I'd love to be able to sit down and talk with you. And so we interchanged a few emails, and sure, this is the time where we will be able to sit down and chat about it more. And then I started thinking about this a year and a half ago, you know, once I've been doing this conference work. A year and a half ago, Adrian Pizza, who runs the largest forum on out-of-body experience and self-destruction called thecastgirlcult.com, he approached me, he saw my material, all my documentation, my research, statistics, everything, and he was very impressed. I don't consider myself anything different, it's just I'm driven to succeed and I want to know. That's just me. I'm an analytical scientist. Personally, I have to see numbers. And he wanted me to come on board and start teaching other people worldwide where he would, you know, be the IT backbone part in IT graphics and IT courses. He did all the proof editing and edit the graphics, the audio, the music, and all that stuff. And so we put together online, you know, people can ask me to visit. Subscribe to the monthly fee of learning how to ask for suggestions. And, you know, it didn't dawn on me that, you know, through the people that were coming to me, and not to like to say too much, but it's been a very rewarding experience. Because now, you know, from what I've been, you know, through the last 20 years, now, what I've been through, I've been trying to give back to the community and help those that are seeking more and want to learn more and enrich in your life. And it's just a very beautiful thing to be able to, you know, help people on many different levels of where they are in their life. If they lost a loved one, if they want to know how that life exists after physical death, if they want to see the matter because Jesus, or if they want, or they're having problems with what seems to be. So, you know, I've been playing the jack of all trades of becoming a teacher and helping different members through the Astral Academy, and I never thought something like this was possible, and it's just opening so many beautiful doors. And it's just one of those things, it's just a long-term progression. And it's just raising yourself a little bit higher and higher. And that's saying that, you know, I'm any better than the next person, but it's just a natural process.
Well, you share with us a bit about two things. How you've integrated the religion and how religion and the dance between religion, religiosity, if we can give it that word, and spirituality and how they integrate in your growing yourself as a spirit conscious spiritual traveler. And also I would like if you would please touch on what we began talking a bit back about the importance of growing yourself as a person along the way, the setting of your clear intention. For example, you know, you don't want to ask to project it with any intention of harm or violation, and the importance of growing yourself, you know, morally and ethically, how morals and ethics come into this conversation of maturing yourself as a spiritual being.
Yeah. You know, 25 years ago, when I was 20 years old, I'm thinking about astral projection. Okay, I want to learn, hey, if life after death exists or not. And that at first experience just really put the, really knocked me for a loop. It just did not sense into me everything because I was very young and immature too. And, you know, my whole thought of being was, like, yeah, everybody owes me this, and, you know, the person that's on the street, you know, that's a beggar, or somebody that's in a car that's less than mine, or vice versa, or whatever, I'm better than them, blah, blah. You know, I hate that kind of mentality. But when I projected, and as I kept projecting, it really knocked sense to me, saying, hey, I'm a little small, microcosmic consciousness, and it's like, I am no different than you. It's like, just because I drive this car, it doesn't make me any better than you at all. So that really, put the brakes on. And it made me study harder and to respect my parents, which I had a real difficult time when I was younger. Like, what major doesn't? It's like, what are my parents? No, you know, that type of mentality. You know, once I started projecting, I'm not saying that when I started projecting, but I started to realize, you know, what an idiot I have been towards them. My relationship grown a little bit more loving and realizing, yeah, they do know something. And, of course, getting out into the real world, oh, yeah, they do know something. Yeah, the religion part of it, it doesn't matter how it is. It's a tough one. And, yes, I struggled with it because I was always brought up Christian and God and Christ and the whole Genesis and Revelations and, you know, don't go outside the box, just, you know, think only in this realm. But I couldn't do that. And that's personally wired inside of me. It's like there's a bigger world outside that we don't see. And we do have access to this. You don't have to ask or project to find God or Christ or Muhammad, Allah, whatever. Okay, you don't have, okay? But for me, being curious, that's the word, curious. I said the cat, and I had to find out if it exists. I wanted to know comfortably, okay, it was actually that exists. Now, do I still have that within me that was actually, was like, exist after physical death? It does. Yeah, we have dogs, because I've proved it over thousands and thousands of times. But still, I have that curiosity because I want to keep learning more. And as I said, within that 25-year progression, you know, when I was younger, I was like, man, I want to get it. Go out and go into the vodka room or go over to my neighbor's house and bounce around a little bit and maybe kind of frighten them. You know, those type of things. You know, pranks and stuff like that, and then the desire component, you know, it's just like, you know, for a long period of time, I'm on a carousel, going around in circles, and I just can't get off, it's like I project, okay, it's a brief moment in flight of happiness, and I'm back. And then after a while, I just realize, wait a minute, you break out of that cycle, that vicious cycle, and you realize, okay, you're cute, you're blonde, you're brunette, whatever. You want to come with me on the experience? Hold my hand, we'll go to the moon, wherever. You know, or to the other. If you want to do some scientific experiments, it'd be great. But, you know, the desire component, hey, okay, whatever. I got to break this cycle because I'm losing out on other more beautiful things that are out there. And as I kind of broke through from that cycle, then I started to see more. And as the positive part of it, too, the intense part of it, you know, if you put something negative, what do you think is going to come back at you? It's going to be negative. Mm-hmm. I really don't And I, like I said, I've seen some real scary things, and there's been times where I've had some real experiences where just, I don't want to sleep ever again, like, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy Krueger type, you know, experiences. And it's like, don't want to sleep, but, you know, I have to. But it's like, don't want to. And there's been times where it's like, okay, obviously, if I focus on the negative, and if I try to do all this, it just can come back to me. Well, I really focus more on love, learning, helping others here physically, world, and what it was like to, and being able to grow, to work through just being stagnant and not doing something about it or doing it about it. Well, for the most part, it's like you burn that younger energy, and you do all those trials and errors, you fall on your face, you get back up, and you keep going at it, and you keep that learning smile. And I never thought, like, 6, 7 years ago that I would be doing tasks on volunteering. I do bedside support, I do music therapy, I play guitar, I play the Bible, sometimes I will, had a couple of pediatric issues that I helped play guitar. For their birthday. I didn't realize that, you know, my volunteer manager came to me one day about, you know, the near death, not about a parent who wanted to go to war. So I'm like, this is what it's about. Remember my first patient. And this is something really simple. The most simple thing. He's an old man, up there in age, and, you know, lived a beautiful life. And unfortunately, he was, you know, admitted into the hospital program. And where I work for a 60 company, and we have a table with a prayer table. So, you know, a lot of people just have animals, Bibles, knickknacks, and so I brought a hospital dog animal to my hospital, you know, just visiting him. And when I brought it to him, I think this is his 50th day or the day after or whatever. His eyes just lit up because, you know, this is just the greatest thing in the world. I mean, this is just the most stuffed animal. But for him, inside, to see that expression of that joy and that happiness and that love, it grabbed me deep. And that's why a lot of what I've learned through the out-of-body experience is a part of it. It leads over to both sides, to the physical and the spiritual. And if you make a sparkle, a glimmer of the difference between these lights for a moment, it's just a lot of happy. That's a gift. That's a pleasure. About 3-4 months ago, my hospice manager, you know, emailed me and said, hey, how do you play this now? I'm going to do the practice. But we have this one theatrical that loves rock and roll. He's having a birthday. And the mother wants, you know, somebody that knows how to play. I don't know if you know any of these plumbers or whatever. Metallica, I'm like, yeah, that's for Metallica. Like Rush, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, and Bob Seger, Jimmy Page, and, you know, Judas Priest, Kiss. So I'm like, when do you want me to be there, and how long can I play? Because I will be there and just, you know, crank out the songs, pound the guitar, and just, you know, give everything to this kid to make him crazy. And so I started talking with the mother, and it became real close to the mom and the family a little bit. And the old guy had his 60th birthday. He didn't know anything about me. And his favorite song was Metallica, on the page, about 3 years, in the cover. And, the kid was just, I mean, unfortunately, in his life, he was just, and he was in the hospice program, so anytime when he lost, it's not a good thing. But his wish was to be able to play guitar or have a guitar or something like that. When my manager went out on a limb and said, would you be interested in
Or something? We're having trouble hearing you.
No, I'm right here.
Okay, because you were dropping off at this end, and I'm hearing from the station now that they can't hear you too well either. So whatever you just did, now we hear you better.
Okay, great.
Wherever you'd maybe speak directly into your phone, whatever you got your setup, that would be great.
Yeah. I'm on my Bluetooth headset. We can't go anymore, director. Director, if that's a word.
Okay, yeah, so something must
more
have been
direct than, yeah.
Okay, because we were losing you there. Toward the end, it was really challenging to hear, and it was bleeding through in the station, too. So perhaps you could just perhaps summarize just the last, you know, maybe 5 minutes of what you said, just in case the listeners were having a bit of trouble as well.
Yeah, there was a pediatric patient that through hospice I learned that he was having a birthday, and my manager asked me if I could play guitar, rock, you know, roll, metal, and I was able to. I was so overjoyed to be able to take part in his birthday party, and when I played all the songs that the kids loved, and unfortunately the child was in hospice and he only had so much, you know, time to live. And for his birthday party, he wanted, like, you know, a guitarist. And so I was fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time. And we were in the front room. I set up my amp, my electric guitar. I'm playing all this fancy guitar stuff and rock and roll, AC/DC, Rush, Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, you name it. And this kid was like on a total different level. You know, he was not bonded by a wheelchair, by a disease, or by, you know, death. I took him to a different level to where I realized, hey, you know, I'm becoming a teacher. I'm becoming something, a part of somebody else's life that I can give that love back of what I've learned and given it to somebody else. And that was the most beautiful thing that I've ever experience. And like I said, there's moments in hospice I question, you know, am I making a difference? And am I making a difference in other people's lives through the Astro Academy or just people that come to my site? And I talk with a whole wide array of different people coming from different, you know, backgrounds, religions, beliefs, faith, you know, problems that they have in their lives, yada, yada, yada. And it's just a progression from what I've learned from out-of-body experiences spiritually and how it has brought me to this point in my time of becoming a teacher. I still consider myself a learner and a student, but at least, you know, through the experiences and what I can give back, that is the positive part of it that I emphasize about the out-of-body experience and going through it with him. because eventually, you know, it breeds, it grows, and you want to give more of yourself. And so, like I said, it's just become a very beautiful experience. One thing I'm going to mention, and I never thought this would actually happen, and it really took me by surprise, is about 3 months, about 3-4 months ago, Adrian Cooper and I, we finally completed the Astro Academy. It's up, open for business. People can register, subscribe. And, you know, for about a good year and a half as we were, you know, writing the courses, the design, the layout, the look, everything, you know, I'm more a graphic artist, you know, the IT person, and just keeping at it, everything. It's just production, production, production. And now I can actually sit back and become the teacher. And I had somebody that came to my website, Invisible Light, not through the Ask Academy, but she is Christian, and her name is Cindy F., and she is physically, legally blind. She has a eye degenerative disorder, heredity, and I believe her mom, her, and one of her sisters, she has another sister, no problem, but she lost her sight and her team. And she is a very devout Christian. She follows church, God, reads the Bible all the time, and she wanted to know about astral projection, and she came to me through Google. So we started chatting. And she said, I want to learn how to project. And I said, well, why don't you visit the Astro Academy? And I'll give you some conferences. You know, we'll have a chat room conference discussion, and we'll go from there. So I sat down for about 2-3 hours, talked with her, and she subscribed. And I'm like, well, this is kind of interesting scientifically if she does project. And at the time, you know, I only had, like, nobody could be just brand new, so I'm like thinking, well, is this going to actually work or not? You know, will I be able to even have a successful student? All I can do is try and help and guide people. So anyway, a few months later, you know, we've been in touch with each other. And so she's, you know, I've been training her, helping her, and, you know, demystifying things and so things that I can explain to my experiences so she can understand and, you know, the whole fear factor, everything. Well, about a month or so ago, she came to me, and we were talking over the phone for about a good, three, four hours. She told me that she's projected. I'm like, no way. So the first thing I asked her, did you see? And she validated as yes. She could see colors. She could see textures. And there's times that she had difficulty with the blurriness. But she could see. And her experience, not only that she could see, I'm like, okay, I got to sit down for this one. She was able to meet with a guide that brought her back. And part of her experience, and this is actually online through the Astro Academy, it's in the Success Story, the Successful Experiences to the Students that who've been able to project with my guidance and help. She started to go further in her experience, and a guide basically said, no, can't go any further. And basically brought her back, and she said it radiated love and kindness, and she felt like she was home. And the experience just absolutely, I mean, this is the first time, I mean, this is stuff that I would hear, like, Raymond Moody, his experience is fine, you know, just stuff that you read online. I'm like, but this is, you know, firsthand. I mean, this gal would not make up. And she's just, I mean, she documented everything to you. She is beautiful. And I had to really sit back and think about it. I'm like, this is stuff that you can, I'm not trying to scare myself to Jesus or anything like that, but he helps somebody see. But I'm thinking, well, this is stuff that you think like prophets or, you know, like a magician or Jesus. I help somebody see for a moment of time. And I was just absolutely just shaking my head and just
the reason I'm speaking, that is a beautiful gift. I mean, to be able to see again, because now you have a physical limitation. You're blind physically, but now you have this ability to see a larger world at this point. And scientifically, I mean, wow. This is a word that you gave me to chill, and I start thinking, what about people who are really sick? Maybe after giving that ability, you can even break out of that fear and fly. You know, next to the side and web activity. So it just does not only go, the blind side of it, but it can open the whole dimension, all different new doors. And I never really thought for the life of me, I didn't even think she was going to project, but she did. And I'm like, you're kidding me. And she described things, she documented things, and I was just so completely blown away. And I said, Cindy, this is the most beautiful thing that I've been able to do to help somebody. And so now that gives somebody hope that they can see again that projection. So that's a process with consent. That's beautiful. That's love. Yes, the whole
thing is a good aura. Yes, I highly recommend people take that in. The astralpulse.com website, that's a free offering in the testimonials. And I was very moved by her testimonial as well on several fronts. The experience of seeing, of course, but also what inspired me as well is the beings that she encountered. And she encountered a rogue being, one that she didn't trust, and she knew it. And then she encountered the being she did trust, who guided her back, and that she was able to maintain her total sovereignty of being in the astral plane. And that was also very telling to me. The other thing about her testimonial that was very inspiring to me was she's a devout Christian. That is something that I care a lot about, and that in my work, I'm very focused on unifying the conversation. And we all have to admit that religion has been a substantial impediment to our spiritual maturity to a large degree, where the fear has intervened. Now, and that's not to say that there aren't spiritual tools within religious doctrines and such like that, but she gave me a message that, you know, the healing of religion and the healing of religion and spirituality is happening because of people like her. Because people like her bringing the integrity of being to the study, to the expression of religion. And then also, you can tell I was very impressed by this one. She also was saying that in her intention, original intention of journeying, she wanted to meet Jesus. And so on her journey, she's out looking for Jesus. And then she shares with us the process of meeting this, you know, loving being. And then the process of, well, maybe that was Jesus, and for a minute it was Jesus, and maybe it wasn't Jesus, and then in the end it didn't really matter if it was Jesus. Yeah. You know, I was very impressed by the humbleness and the genuine expression of that very brilliant young woman. That just gives me so much faith in our future and this conversation evolving, because I am just a firm believer that this is the human evolving. We are opening ourselves to a much wider palette, I call it palette, of spiritual integration. It's not like these spiritual planes are foreign in the sense that they don't exist. It's just like a button on our computer, so to speak, that we haven't pushed yet. You know, we haven't explored this channel. That's why your work is so important. And likewise, just listening to you and the way that you have just come into it in such an organic way, you are a very genuine, heart-centered being that is just doing the natural thing, you know? Because the other challenge that we have is, you know, the preying on the initiate mentality, you know? You follow me? You know, there's a lot of people out there who know a word or two, and they wow, you know, the young mind. You know, they wow them, and they think, ooh, they know more than me. But nobody knows more than you, ever.
No.
Ever. No, Nobody knows more than you. You always are, you know, I think, in my personal opinion, taking that position of you think, if you think you know more than somebody, and then you've missing the opportunity to learn from that person.
Definitely.
And so, you know, why bother? Everybody is a teacher. Everybody has a lesson. Everybody has more to learn and more to grow. So we don't need to go like, I know more and you know less. You know, that kind of hierarchy is false. That is false. It is not real. Yeah. It does not foster spiritual maturity. It is a power struggle. And it doesn't, I mean, it's important. Like, you know, everything has a place. And in those struggles, we learn who we are. We, you know, everybody's got their different roads, so they're not bad or wrong. But I'm very interested in conversations that join people, that unify the conversation of spirituality, of religion, that bring them all to the table in a place where they can go, yeah, I go to spirit with Muhammad, and I go to spirit with Buddha, and you are my teacher, and I am yours. You know, this is just, I'm just really grateful you've taken time to come and be with us here, because your work is really important, David. It is so, so, so important that you are coming forward with this gift that, you know, you can share with such a grounded understanding, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, Adrian approached me a year and a half ago, and I did have a very difficult time with, you know, charging money, because through my website, invisiblelight.us, it's all through my experiences and everything, and hey, somebody asked me, I'm going to take my time, and it was 2-3 hours, 4 hours, or a day, I'll teach you for free, I don't care, you know, it's not about the money. I had a very difficult time on it, but after a good year and a half of working on the website, the people asked. That's another thing I wanted to kind of get into. But I said, I still have a difficult time where, you know, a subscription, it is a subscription. You know, it's pretty much the material and the presentation of what is there. That's what you're paying for. Just like if you go to college, you're paying for books, you're paying for the material and the instructor's time. And the amount that we do charge is a very modest amount. And if I was to sit down with the people that I was to help them through the conference room or through emails, I would be rich. I would be a rich man. I'd be a millionaire. But I offer everything to where people can contact me anytime, free of charge. It's not what it's about. It's about giving you the tools to succeed and to get you going. And I've had a lot of people who've had difficulty with financial part of it. I said, here, have React, enjoy it. Or contact me and let's see what we can work out. Or let's just go from there and here's some maturity to get started. If you really, you know, the spiritual part of it, you know, money, I still have a difficult time with it. But I also realize the components that are there, it's a tool, and it's an organization to help others. And when Cindy came to me, I said to Cindy, hey, you're more than welcome to join. If you don't like it, hey, you can leave 1 month, you got all the material, whatever. You know, some people will join, take all the courses and run. And some people have been, you know, following it and asking questions, and I'll be glad to ask anything. And, you know, I'm not saying anything negative about other sites that are out there, but you know, it's immodest. It's a modest subscription versus when I see people charging like $500 to $1,000 for an hour to be able to talk to somebody. Time is money, money's time, true. But honestly, it's like I would have loved to have something like this, you know, 25 some years ago when I was starting. It would have been a gift. Yeah, and like I said, I don't look at it as numbers. If you want in, here it is. You know, if you want to be able to connect with me one-on-one free, that's fine too. But it's like anything else. But yeah, the those components, you know, it's just being able to open up so many different doors that I never thought that would be possible. The first gal who actually rejected, her name is Yolette, and she's a medical doctor. She's retired, and she's down in Brazil. And as we were talking first, and, you know, I had to kind of think, you know, I kind of started to think, okay, the gal's Brazil, you know, the stigma that I start thinking, like, well, she's made, you know, Brazil, she's way down there, and not be able to speak really well, and her profession, you know, I don't know where she was coming from, and I'm just thinking, you know, third world, huh, what? But I found out she's a medical doctor, she's retired, got a beautiful family, everything, and she wanted to learn more about experiences. And she was asking questions about certain things, about the fear factors, and that's the biggest one that I get, and I will touch on that. Huge. And Cindy, same thing, and another guy who's successful projecting. The fear, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one to get over. And a lot of it comes down to a lot of people, when they enter that trance state, they get shocked at the vibration, and they can't move. First thing you're going to do is you're going to freak out. You're going to be fearing. And the best thing you can do is stay calm, realize you will come back. You will return back to the physical body. I've been out thousands and thousands of times. I've always returned. I've seen heaven. I've seen, you know, hell. And I've been shocked. I've been bitten. I've been stabbed. I've been gunshot. You name it, the whole works. I've been choked by, like, green, evil, scary monsters saying, take my hand, become one of us, or you're going to die. I mean, that type of scenario. I've always returned that. But a lot of people will get that sense that there's somebody's in the room, evil, blah, 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 and they freak out, and they go through their World War III, and that trance state, the vibration kicking in full force, and it's a negative experience. And so they say, hey, this is not for me. Can't do it. Well, if I was to have had that experience, I would have felt and what
your Bluetooth again, hon.
Bluetooth.
What's up with the Bluetooth? Yeah, not yet. Keep.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, test.
A little bit better. Okay.
Can you hear me now? Hello? Test for echo, 1, 2, 3.
Okay. It's, it got this echo in it.
Okay.
Okay, now try.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Better.
Okay.
Much better.
A lot of people will have that fear factor, and it's totally, you know, understandable. But you can't put that, you know, you can't base everything on one experience. Because if I was to base my first experience on what I went through and not having that curiosity to try it again and giving it a benefit of the doubt, I would have never made it this far. And when Cindy came to me, her being, you know, a devout Christian, and it's just a beautiful woman, you know, a student, everything, and she's a music major, and she attends a university, and for a gal that gets around, I mean, it's very impressive. She offers me, you know, hope, and I think about my challenges or me being lazy or, I mean, I'm thinking, hey, this gal, you know, she's physically challenged with sight. I'm like, hey, Dave, you can do better at work, or you can do better with your legs, or you can you can help more. You know what I'm saying? It's like she's a very inspiration.
I know so well what you're saying. As you know, you were a very loyal friend to my mom, Juliet Nightingale, and she likewise was physically challenged on so many levels, but likewise was legally blind. And I can just so totally relate. I mean, I can never complain after hanging out with her for 27 years. I can't complain. Yeah. I can't say, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. After watching her, it completely removed that I can't from my reality. It doesn't exist because there's no way. I can't do it. It's so humbling. No, man. Laziness, we're done with that.
Yeah,
can't do it. But, can't do it.
Yeah, you know, what the whole fear thing is that, you're going to have those experiences, and it's going to be, you know, kind of crazy in a while, for a while. But the best thing you can do, and I've actually, when I was helping Cindy and a couple others too, I said, what I normally do is this. I don't like the vibration. That's the energy when you're shifting between two different bodies, you get vibrations. Like a radio frequency, you're tuning in and you're getting shocked with vibrations, and not a pleasant thing. But sometimes it just feels like you're just being electrocuted and or you're being tased. Oh. Don't tase me, bro. But I mean, literally, it just feels like you're just electrocuted and it just doesn't stop, and you can't move, freak out, and then your mind starts making up all these little weird things. Oh, there's a man in the room. It's scary, or you know, this, that, and it's very easy to do. You can do it by the instant of imagination, create it right there in the astral, and you're going to feel that, and you're going to sense that, and you're going to freak out. The best thing you can do is when that occurs, the best thing one can do is, you know, try to exercise technique by rolling. So, like what I usually do is I feel vibrations, and they're not pleasant. I start to think that I'm like either I'm punching a little ball, and I start spinning around at extreme speed, and it subsides those vibrations. I'm actually, you know, exercising. I'm trying to get out quicker so that way I don't have to feel that. But what I'm actually doing is if I just sit there and just take it, that's what's going to happen, and everything's going to take a lot longer to return. But if I exercise a method, then it's going to subside that, and then I'm going to be focused. And also, the biggest thing that I see is that just reject is one thing, and that's an excellent intent. Okay, so I want to project, that's my intent. So I project, so I'm out, what now? And then I get pulled back. What you need to do is focus on what your goal is. My first OBE, and this is how I got out, and it was by accident, but I had been practicing projection after projection for about two, 3 months. Towards the end, I started getting skeptical, and I kind of started to, yeah, well, whatever, if it happens, it happens, type, you know, mentality, and just kind of going about it. And I was reading a book, and it was a book on Out of Body Experiences by Janet Lee Mitchell. Excellent book with scientific everything. Single Swan was in it, Miranda Moody, and all the other greats of the 70s and 80s at the time. And it was just a beautiful book. I just cannot sit down. I was so obsessed with the book. Well, being obsessed with a book, to me, I'm not a reader. Okay, I'd rather listen to or watch a movie than listen to an audio book. I just don't like to read. But I just couldn't put this book down. I wanted to read it. But at the time, I was tired. I needed to take a nap, yada, yada, yada. And I gave up. I said, okay, I'm taking a nap. So I'm down in the basement. Doors are closed. Lights are off. I'm going to take a sleep for a couple hours, whatever. But on my mind was the book. It was the book. So what do you think happened? I project. But I didn't realize what was happening. It was kind of like being drunk, getting up, kind of like floating around, bobbing up and down, but the whole room was all lit, and I'm looking around at the bed, and I'm like, what in the world? I didn't know what it was. But as I went on with the experience, the first thing that hit my mind was, oh, yeah, I want to get the book. Yeah, I want to read the book. So that's what I'm trying to say, is that that was my motivator to get me out. If you have those convictions, just projecting, I just want to project, you know, that there's no drive towards that, just to project. Go beyond that level and say, I want to project, but I also want to go outside the door and look around. That's a goal. Take baby steps. Hey, if you want to go to the moon on your first OBE experience, go for it. Or if you want to stay in your house, pick up the phone, try to call yourself, yell, and see if you can make contact with yourself on the other side, see your cell phone, go for it. Or if you want to look at yourself in the mirror, you got to have that extra step, you know, that extra goal beyond just trying to project. So the whole fear factor, if you just sit there and take it, yeah, you're going to freak out and it's going to be very fearful. And you won't have nothing to shoot for. But if you have that goal, then you're actually learning how to project and controlling your environment and learning. You're like a baby. You're starting off with crawling in another world that's infinity. And it takes time to get used to your body and all these unique work mechanisms that you can do. And it's not like the physical, that's for sure. But you got to have that. If you just sit there and if the vibrations shock you, you're going to freak out. But if you have some kind of goal, you have some kind of drive, like I say, it's going to be scary. It will be. Because it can be a whole new thing. I can preach to the choir and to the cows come home and say, hey, you know, this is what you're going to experience. But once you experience it for yourself, that's a whole totally different world.
Do you meditate? Are there other ways that you've developed this knowing? What I understand you're describing is when we're in that place where we're changing vibrations, literally changing worlds or changing dimensions, people might say, there's a vibratory rate that changes, and that's where often the fear factor comes in, where people perhaps we're becoming conscious of it for the new experience of being conscious of it and realizing it as a doorway rather than just going on to sleep or something like that. Is that accurate? And then in that doorway of that vibration shift, we're choosing where we take our soul or spirit body from there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
You're just moving into a frequency, and you're just learning how to exit from one body to the next and absorbing and, you know, filling into that body and transferring your consciousness. No, I do not meditate. I don't meditate at all. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, you need to meditate because you'd be great. You'd be like the guru and everything. I'm like, you know, as active my mind is, I've done yoga, I've done a little meditation. I could not just sit still because my mind is always active. And I think that's one of the biggest ingredients of why I'm successful is because my mind is continuously going. And then as my body's falling asleep, my mind, you know, puts back, hey, I'm in the state now. And it's almost kind of like trying to find a needle in a haystack, but I find it each time I'm able to project. And I've gotten so lucky at that. I'm so blessed to be able to project like that. And a lot of people don't have that ability. They can do this, yeah. They can truly do it, like Cynthia or Yolette or my other student, Michael. He projected too, and he just needed clarification on the fear. He asked me about meditation. He asked me specifically, he was really fearful. And then, you know, a Christian woman coming to me and going way above outside the box, it's incredible. And like you were saying, you know, a little ways earlier, is that the religious infrastructures emphasize one thing, yeah, you shouldn't be doing all this. Okay? Wait a minute here. Okay, I'm gonna challenge the Bible, okay? True. Now I'm going to, and I've read the Bible from beginning to the very end. And I actually took notes. And as I took the notes, I realized, wow, there is just so many trance states, so much communication between angels and, you know, the different disciples and people and everything. You're like, wait a minute here. There's nothing any more different than what I'm doing, going out of body, going into trance state, communicating with an angel. I tested my one angel that I met the first time, and I was scared. Oh, heck yeah, I was scared. But when I asked, are you from God? She says, we all of God. I'm like, oh, okay. And she was very comforted. And she was very concerned. She always came back and asked me, are you okay with this? Do you want to go farther? And then I said, yes, I want to see this. What is really interesting about this experience, it happened about 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago, that experience. Went down the tunnel, saw the light, everything, and I said, angel. But it came up once, like in my previous experiences, but I was aborted. And I just, you know, was just so totally blown away. I was just like, this is awesome. Why did I always get so fearful just going down the tunnel? Just do it, you know, you see the light on the other side. And then she showed me another perspective of my life, like in a 360 degrees, and I'm like, whoa, this is a trip. And I'm seeing every single angle, you know, up, down, around myself. And I was looking at kind of like in a business setting. I was by a computer monitor, and I was showing people. I was like a teacher of some sort, showing, demonstrating something. Well, it didn't dawn on me, and this actually happened in a previous interview. It didn't dawn on me until after the Astro Academy started to become in production, where I'm helping others. And I started thinking, is it possible that link, that could have been a possible link, the computer monitor being the analogy for what I'm instructing people on the internet as a teacher. Computer monitor, teacher, people in front of me. And I kind of, you know, stepped back thinking, it's possible. Very strong possible that when I was looked at the angel, she showed me. So then I asked the angel, it was really interesting, and she said, is everything completely recorded? And she says, yes, everything's recorded. And I'm like, that's not a bad word. And she kind of like, in a jovial tone, says, yeah, that's something that you can kind of work on. And I'm like, thanks. You know, kind of comical, but still, I mean, this gal's on everything. I mean, I'm just ready to say something, bam, you know, it's out, tells me, mental telepathy, back and forth, instantaneous. Mm. But she always had some advice. She was always calm. She was always reassuring me comfortably and with love. And anyway, after coming back from that experience, you know, that kind of really pushed me further into the hospice. And it also helped me with language of trying to use less colorful metaphors in my everyday life, and I'm not saying that I didn't cancel it, but I'm a lot better off now than I was. So it's a teaching experience, okay, on all levels. And when a religious person comes to me trying to dispute me, saying, and I lay out the cards about that whole experience, I think everything was positive. Everything. So how can you say that back in the Bible days, that you know, all this kind of stuff, you just said, why can't this exist now, and why can't we not be guided now to this type of vehicle? It's all based on sense and how we go about it. And I sat down with my pastor, who actually married me, and my wife was having a very difficult time with all after protection stuff, and she's so blessed. And, I know, those are, but, you know, she supports me with what I'm doing, but she still, you know, she has her own upbringing and beliefs, and I believe Texas. I don't try to, you know, brainwash her or take her over to the other side or anything like that. I just think that I have to look at the sense of positive and what the things do. And what's just becoming a negative, or if I'm hurting people, that's one thing. But what I'm doing by helping somebody see again, or helping somebody with their you know, abuse problems with you know, substance, and kind of getting more spiritual components and say, you know, focusing on this, but also speak to you how professionally too. Okay? Or what has helped me with positive, or, you know, bringing that love to a child who's dying, just like playing guitar and seeing it out of his face, you know, bringing them to that level and taking them away from that scene. You know, that all comes from the out-of-body experiences. So, you know, religious folks out there that say, hey, the out-of-body experience is the devil's work. Show me the devil's work in what I see in this. Okay? I can say otherwise, it's not the devil's work. There's nothing to be here of it, because back in the day, all those experiences,
Hmm. Well, we are coming to our rounding the corner here, and I am wanting to be sure that we offer all the pertinent information for people to find you again. And the I'll go ahead and share the website that I know, invisiblelight.us. That's your personal story, your personal beginning. And then the astralpulse.com is the Astral Academy, where people can learn more about the school, become involved in the school, and the resources available in that. There is a great forum, and it's a new website, so it's just clearly blossoming very well in a young form, I think. And the forum on there is really outstanding. It's really quite striking, the tremendous interest in this and how many intelligent questions are asked and answered, and the way that people have just been able to enjoy the conversation available there. So I want to encourage people who are interested in developing the rapport for their own spiritual development in this capacity to check those out. And so in our last few minutes, love, would you please offer us what you see in your trajectory from here in this study and teaching of yours, and any other final thoughts that you would like to share?
My final thought by David Warner. Well, we could be on another radio show for another 2 hours with you on final thoughts. But, you know, from what I've learned from all these years is that even though I have all this experience, I'm still a learner, you know, and I can teach and I can help others. And it's a gift to be able to, you know, to be a part of the Astral Academy. I mean, the Astral Pulse, the form, started back in, like, the late 90s, and Adrian Cooper, who runs the largest astral projection forum, has over 79,635 members. And out
that's
of those
why.
People, he picked me, okay? And that was here. I'm thinking, are you sure about this?
Mm.
And I can't even begin to say so much thanks to Adrian and for the people who supported me over the years with the Academy, who followed my work. And it's just, I mean, the Academy, it's going to be around for a very, very, very long time. It's going to take time, and it's going to keep growing. And I would say the biggest part of the Academy, which is really awesome, is a remote learning school, and I'd like to be able to see more of the members to take part in, is the real meat and potatoes is that you can talk to me directly to your conference room, which is moderated, and it's not something to where you have a chat room. We can interact through a whiteboard where I can share my material, or I can look at, you know, I can have you guys moderate and you can share your material. We can do voice. We can text. We can do everything that deals with communication with online remote learning. And the company that made that possible is called Big Blue Button. So when you have time, for the guests that are listening and, you know, and the actual listeners, take part. Look at that conference room, because everybody can learn from each other. So if I had like 4 or 5 students in at a time for a class and session, and we're all learning so much from each other, it just never stops. Some of my future endeavors, and I've been really struggling with this, is trying to get the inspiration, because all my time has been, you know, geared towards my marathon running, my dieting, breaking a few physical habits, and trying to actually get my book written. I have about 150 pages, and I got, not that I have a mental block, I just have so much to say, it's just like a book report. So I'm trying to get that accomplished and try to balance everything in life, and it's a challenge. So that's one of my biggest goals that I'd like to be able to at least by this assembly. As for the conference and the Astral Pulse forums, you never stop learning. And with astral projection, think about it like running a marathon. You never start, you never stop, keep working at it, working at it. And at least with the Academy, I can sit down and chat with you by phone, through the conference room, and you have me at your disposal to talk your ear off for hours and hours to say, yes, you can project, you can be it. But with a clear, fair, modest description. And I don't want to talk like 1,000 or anything like that, but when you look at other institutions and all that, it was definitely a lot of the people that who signed up, it's definitely it's very unique and a very modest place. And it's going to do well.
Yay. Well, thank you so much, David. And we all deserve to get paid. And you know what? It's really a cool thing about our economic rewriting itself, you know. And so I really support you and all of us in learning to receive. And, you know, you're not getting paid for your hour there. You explained it well. It's for the totality of the gift, which is 20-odd years, you know. This is a beautiful opportunity for learning reciprocity. And so I'm really excited for you, and I really appreciate you taking time to come here. And the Alchemy of Light broadcast has been expanded again with this great, great wisdom, and that we all can do this. We all can develop this part of ourselves, this deeper mind, this understanding of who we are inside. And so thank you for bringing that message and for bringing the tools. You know, not only did you bring the message, but you brought us the tools to get going here. So,
I wish I had that 25 years ago when I started, and, you know, the tools are there and they can get people a little bit quicker to where they need to be. And I'm not going to say it's not going to be worse, because it's work every single day with it, but you have tools to help you, and that's where my path has been leading me, is to become a teacher and to help others, and on so many different levels, from the Academy to hospice to for everything, you know, that I've been doing and been able to achieve. And it's very beautiful, and I thank you so much for having me on your show. And we'll definitely be talking way more in the future, too, and keeping in touch. And it's been an honor.
Likewise, David. Take good care of yourself, mate, and keep healing. And my love to your doggy friends, too. I'm a big doggy person, you know. So we got to be signing off. There's another show coming up right behind us. So thank you to all the listeners. Thank you to the ancestors and all our friends in the spirit realms who've joined us here and enhanced our show and our broadcast. And so for this time, we will sign off. Thank you, listeners, so much. Thank you all for joining us in this conversation. Until next time, take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. This is Jamil Graham signing off.